It's really hard for any of us to understand exactly how it is that someone who claims to love us so much can be so horrible and cruel to us. And this is especially true as we're getting ready to go through the discard phase, whether we're doing it ourselves, we're discarding the narcissist, or we are discarded. And sometimes we don't really realize this until after we're discarded. Why is it that they want to destroy us in that process? And what do I mean by that? So you think you might be going through the discard, or you just went through the discard, or you're going through it now. I'm going to help you out, and I'm going to share with you some of the mistakes that I made when I went through the narcissistic discard and exactly how you can avoid them and do a little better than I did when you end your relationship with a narcissist. After you get out of a relationship with a narcissist, inevitably you're going to feel like you've been traumatized. You're going to feel like you've just been through hell and back. And that's exactly how most of us feel in those moments. You feel confused. You feel lost. You feel hurt. You don't understand how you were so in love with that person in one minute, and then in the next minute, suddenly you're trash and there's nothing that you can do to change their opinion. They might cheat on you. They'll definitely devalue you. They will humiliate you. And you'll find yourself going, how in the heck am I ever supposed to trust anybody again? Ever. You doubt yourself, you doubt your ability to judge other people, and maybe up to this point in your life you thought, I'm really good at understanding people. It's kind of one of my gifts. I thought that too. Narcissists aren't like other people. Anybody who's been in a relationship with a narcissist will feel me on this one. You are dealing with someone who's not a standard human being. They don't have the same kinds of emotions. They most definitely do not have the same kind of empathy as normal people. On the plus side, they're really predictable. They seem like they follow the same relationship patterns again and again and again. They go through the same cycle, which looks like love or idealize, devalue, discard, hoover, where they suck you back in, and back again. This can happen time and time again in the same relationship, or it can happen repeatedly throughout this narcissist's life in many different relationships, and often concurrently with other relationships. And even though most people think narcissists are very devious and they do seem to be kind of outside of what society would prefer or what people in general would prefer them to be, they also are kind of simple and kind of predictable if you really look for the patterns. When you learn to recognize the early signs that you're dealing with a narcissist, then in the future you can decide if you want to continue to be in one of those relationships. So why are they so prone to being abusive? Let's talk about it. There are two different things that kind of lend to that for them, and the first one is the lack of empathy. They are very low on emotional empathy for other people, and it seems like especially those who are closest to them. Now, empathy, just in case you didn't know, is the ability to sort of feel the feelings of other people, to understand and care about the feelings of other people. And then the other thing is the whole object constancy factor. They lack the ability to feel love at the same time that they feel anger. When they feel like you've done something to hurt them, they literally don't love you in that moment. It's a Freudian concept. It's important to remember that not everybody with narcissistic personality disorder is the same level of abusive. NPD exists on a spectrum. In fact, I would say the whole cluster B personality disorder group is on a spectrum. Ultimately, I think it comes down to the fact that they are personality disordered. As a result of being in relationship with that person, you have been emotionally and psychologically beaten down. And they do that because they want to control you. And they know that if you don't think much of yourself, if you don't have the strength to go away from them, to leave them, to run away, you are controllable, you are manipulatable, and you will not leave. It's kind of like clipping a bird's wings, but maybe a little more painful. So we're going to talk about the mistakes that I made leaving my narcissist that you can either avoid or maybe identify with and help other survivors avoid as we go forward. So let's talk about that. Mistake number one for me was counting on someone else to help me. And what I mean by that is not so much the physical moving part, but counting on someone else's iron will to help me. Because in this case, I was counting on someone else who was trying to control my life. And that person would continue to control my life in different ways for several years after the day that I left this person. Mistake number two was that I doubted myself. But I doubted myself because of mistake number three, which was telling him a week before I left that I was leaving. Why was that a mistake? He did help me pack the stuff, which was nice. But outside of that, I gave him an opportunity to remind me why I got with him in the first place. I gave him an opportunity to show me that he could change. I gave him an opportunity to hoover me, for lack of a better word. I know a lot of you are asking yourselves, well, how do you know he didn't really change and you didn't miss out, right? Well, I happen to be really lucky here because I've actually gotten a chance to speak with two of his following three wives, because of the third one I think he's still married to after me. So I was wife number one. I got a chance to talk to wife two and wife three, and now he's married to wife four, who I have never spoken to. Wife two and three both told me that his behavior during their relationships was pretty much identical to his relationship with me. And that included all the different forms of abuse and neglect that he was so famous for doling out. If I knew then what I know now, I would have done one thing differently. I want to say number one is not allow anyone to affect my decision, but the fact is that maybe I needed that at that moment in my life. But the true mistake that I made of all the other mistakes was telling this person in advance that I was leaving. So when you're dealing with narcissists and making the mistakes that we all make with narcissists, how do you keep yourself kind of safe during the discard? How do you ensure your emotional safety and keep yourself as safe as possible during the discard? Well, you have to start by setting boundaries. First of all, we have to recognize that these things are going to be a little bit uncomfortable. Setting boundaries is going to be uncomfortable for us because we started off not doing that. A lot of us have been people pleasers. A lot of us have spent our whole lives feeling like, what if somebody doesn't like the choice I make? I think when we're setting our boundaries, we have to stop caring what other people think. We don't have to be a huge jerk about it, though. What we have to do is we have to decide within ourselves, separately and independently of other people, these are the things that I will tolerate and these are the things that I will not tolerate. For example, in a relationship. In my relationship, the deal is you don't hit me or abuse me in any way, mentally, physically, or otherwise. You don't hurt my children in any way, and you don't cheat on me. Those three things, I walk away, no discussion. You know what you did. Anything else we can talk about and try to get through. I'm not saying that I will tolerate anything else. I'm just saying those three things are definitely deal breakers for me. How did I set those boundaries? I made it very clear to my husband when I first met him many years ago that this is what the deal was and these were my deal breakers. He also made clear his deal breakers, which conveniently enough were the same as mine. So that worked out really well for both of us. How do you practice setting boundaries? Start small. Start with someone in your life who is maybe a little kinder to you or a stranger. You know what I mean? Start with someone who isn't as important or significant to you if necessary. For example, if you have a job and your boss says, hey, can you work on Saturday? But you've already made plans to go out of town on Saturday and your boss knew it. And you can say, well, you know, I'm going out of town tomorrow night, Friday night, whatever, and I won't be back until Monday. So unfortunately, I can't work on Saturday. Or maybe you could say, or I can't work on Saturday in the office, but I can dial in from wherever I'm going to be if necessary. You know what I mean? But set your boundaries, whatever those are, one at a time. And when it comes to relationships, it's about the deal breaker factor. So let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought about the boundaries that you had for yourself and your life before you met the narcissist versus the ones you have right now or that you had during the relationship? Wait a minute. Before you answer that, let me clarify something. I'm not talking about the fun or silly, OMG, I'll never wear bell bottoms kind of boundary. Because let me tell you something. I had that one. I crossed it. Can't wait to do it again, y'all. Anyway, I'm talking about the serious, intrinsic, deep down in your gut, gotta stick to it or your tummy's gonna hurt kind of boundaries. So let me ask you, have your personal boundaries, your personal basic standards been changed or altered as a result of a relationship with a toxic narcissist? While we're asking questions, if you're unfortunate enough to have had a narcissistic parental figure in your life, or you've been in a relationship longer than you should, do you really even know what your personal boundaries are, or have they been defined for you by someone else? Narcissists have a way of always pushing our boundaries, sometimes even as a way to amuse themselves. Yeah, I'm not kidding, and that's not an exaggeration. I've been told by more than one narcissist that they just like to mess with people, or that they intentionally start drama just to see what people are going to do about it. They think it's funny, but sometimes their agenda is so much more calculated than just to amuse myself. And that's when you have to be especially cautious. That's because when it comes to dealing with a narcissist on the regular, you've got to recognize that a certain amount of conditioning happens to each and every one of us. And even, and maybe especially to those of us who are very intelligent. You might find yourself in a panic if you have to stand up for yourself or say no to someone. And you might even have physical symptoms that include dry mouth, dissociation, you know, where you get kind of confused and foggy. And you might even feel dizzy, nauseous, or just plain old anxious. And of course, this is exactly what the narcissist wants, right? Because it allows the narcissist to remain in control of the situation and ultimately in control of you. The narcissist knows that if they nag you, discredit you, and or the boundary that they're crossing is repeatedly crossed, you will eventually get tired of fighting and you'll just let it go, as in accept it, or at least not require the narcissist to continue to justify it or discuss it. This allows the cycle, the toxic cycle, to repeat and continue. And you know, a narcissist needs his victims or her victims to blindly trust them. If the victim doesn't blindly trust the narcissist, well, the narcissist will do everything they can, everything in their power to break you until you do
blindly trust them, or at least you pretend to.
Anytime you go through a breakup or a divorce with a normal person or a healthy person, you may struggle to make sure you have closure. Some therapists will even ask you to reach out to that person and find a way to discuss whether or not you have feelings left for each other and how to deal with them from here. However, when we're talking about narcissists, this is a whole other ball of wax. When you're leaving a narcissist, you're already overwhelmed, exhausted, maybe even afraid. Sometimes the logistics feel impossible. So whether you end the relationship with the narcissist or the narcissist ends the relationship with you, at this point you will become worthless to the narcissist when they decide they're all done with you. Maybe you hurt them, maybe they think that makes you worthless. Maybe they've decided they're too good for you and that makes you worthless. Whatever the case may be, this might lead them to do smear campaigning and much more. They like to humiliate people after relationships. The narcissist will generally do one of two things. They'll either completely humiliate you and tell you and the rest of the world how much you hurt them and how terrible that you are, or they'll just disappear and fall off the planet for you. Either way, you know, they ghost you. Either way, you're left spinning and going, what the heck just happened? Sometimes they don't do closure because you don't matter to them, and other times they don't do it because they want you to think that you don't matter to them. But either way, it's almost never that a narcissist gives anyone a proper form of closure at the end of a relationship. On the plus side, closure is possible. It can happen, but you have to create it yourself. So the first step to doing that is to sort of try to let go of the illusion of what you thought the relationship was. This is true whether we're talking about a romantic relationship or a family relationship or a friend relationship. We had some idea in our mind who that person was and who they thought we were, and now suddenly we're seeing clearly. We're awake and we know that it wasn't exactly what we thought it was. It's really important for us to let go of that illusion of goodness, the illusion of what we thought we had, and to sort of be aware, be awake, and understand what's really happening and what really happened. Like we talked about yesterday, no contact is really an important part of recovery. In fact, it's almost necessary for anyone who is able to do it. Sometimes you're going to have to deal with a narcissist on certain things, like if you have kids or you have a business together. But if that's the case, low contact is your best option, and you only deal with them on a business level. No emotions involved. You have to recognize that everything that we thought was real in the relationship was just a lie. It was just an illusion. And it's painful. You're going to mourn it like a death. In fact, statistics tell us that things like divorce are more stressful than things like actual death. So be aware of that. When you're able to start letting go of that illusion, you're going to be able to start finding your actual self. You're going to go through a phase where you do a lot of research. You're doing that right now by watching this video. You need to understand the person on a logical level. And I think most intelligent people have that need once they realize what the heck they've been going through. You then have to accept what you can control and what you can't control, and recognize there are some things you have power over and some things you don't. What you do have power over is yourself and your own perception and your own world. What you don't have power over is the narcissist. So the best thing that you can do is steer clear, stay up as far away as possible, and don't engage unless you're absolutely forced to because you have children or a business together. You won't receive closure from a narcissist, but you can find something in yourself that is beautiful out of all of this mess. This is a big rubble-filled mess, this thing that happened. What you can do is start pulling the rocks off the mess and look in there, and there will be your beautiful, bright soul. And you can nurture yourself and you can love yourself to the point that you begin to really grow and change. You can create your own closure without being in contact with the narcissist. You can create your own closure and find your own peace. And this is the best part of all of this, the silver lining of this whole darn situation. And that is that you can come out being a better, stronger, more evolved person than you ever were before you started this relationship. I'm not saying it's the best way to get to it. I'm just saying if you've already been through it, you might as well take that silver lining and run with it.
I think it's really important to start with the why of anything, why it happens. And the reason I think that is because for me, knowledge has always been power. When I learn about something and I understand the basics and the mechanics of it, I always feel more empowered and I always feel more capable of handling that problem. So we're going to start right here. Why do we feel so stuck? Why do we feel so exhausted? Why do we feel like we can't get out of bed, or we can't get out of the house, or we can't do the things we just really need to do in our everyday lives? What does that come from? Well, I suggest that it comes from CPTSD. And this is something that happens when you are in a long-term relationship with any type of abuser, or you go through any type of long-term emotional trauma. And that's exactly what CPTSD is. For a quick definition on the official side of things, CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, is a psychological disorder that you can develop in response to various long-term traumas. That is, repeated experiences of trauma in a context where you feel like you just really can't escape from it. Does that make sense to you? So just to give you an idea of the types of people that end up with CPTSD or the types of experiences that they have, this is commonly found in people who have experienced various types of abuse, chronic sexual abuse, chronic psychological or physical abuse, neglect, chronic intimate partner abuse, chronic emotional abuse, victims of kidnapping, victims of hostage situations, people who have gone through human trafficking, sweatshop workers, prisoners of war, concentration camp survivors. All of these things. Well, what does CPTSD look like? Some of the things you might feel during CPTSD might include feeling scared all the time, or feeling helpless or worthless, feeling hopeless, depressed, anxious, all of that stuff. And the worst thing about CPTSD, where it stands out above other types of psychological disorders or psychological conditions, is the fact that CPTSD changes who you are at the core. And it involves a lot of emotional dysregulation, which just basically means that you have trouble controlling what goes on inside your own head or your own heart, your own emotions. And that's something that we can work on together. Depression tends to lead to immobilization anyway, but what we have as survivors of narcissistic abuse often is what they call walking depression, which means you don't really know you're depressed. You still function, you still act like a normal person, as far as anyone can tell, but you're kind of dissociated. You're kind of going through this thing that most people just don't understand. And so even though on the outside you look normal, on the inside you feel kind of broken. Well, when we get to the place where we stop being able to function, I think it's pretty understandable given what we've all gone through, right? But why does CPTSD, why does recovering from narcissistic abuse lead us into feeling stuck? Why does that happen exactly? I mean, I could tell you, okay, it's because of PTSD, but what does that really mean? Let's talk about that. So if you're still in the relationship or if you're just freshly out of it, you can probably admit that during the relationship, you may have become exhausted by the abuse, by the ridiculous demands that the narcissist had on you. And if you were in one of those relationships where the narcissist required a large amount of your time or attention, you may have been so emotionally exhausted from that, that in the rare moments when the narcissist wasn't in your face, all up in your business, you might have just had to sit and do nothing, or lay in your bed and do nothing, just so that you could emotionally recover, because you just didn't have any more emotions to give other people. Now, you may have even found yourself accidentally or intentionally pulling away from other people in your life who required your emotional attention simply because you couldn't possibly give one more bit of yourself. Well, this makes us depressed, it makes us anxious, and it gives us that walking depression factor where we're functioning, but we're not really functioning. Some of the things that you're dealing with CPTSD on a deeper level, of course, you've got the depression and anxiety and the other stuff, but you might also just have persistent feelings of just being so sad. You might be persistently feeling angry, or you might even have thoughts that I don't even want to talk about right here, but you might even have thoughts of ending it all. That's not healthy, but it's normal for survivors of abuse. It's normal for survivors of abuse to have a moment of that. What's important, if you do feel that way, is that you don't take it lightly and that you do something to change how you feel and how you perceive yourself in those moments. Another thing that happens to us in CPTSD is forgetting stuff. We forget traumatic memories. We forget what it felt like to go through the abuse. We might find ourselves reliving the traumatic events over and over again, awake or asleep. We very often dissociate, where we feel completely detached from ourselves and the world around us. We feel guilty. We feel like we're, you know, kind of stigmatized, or we're pariahs in our communities. Or we feel like we're just really different from everybody else in our lives. Like, we just kind of feel like we don't belong here sometimes. If we're still in the relationship, or when we were in the relationship, we may have given way too much power to our narcissist. We may have decided that our narcissist was the all-powerful person in our lives and we must obey them. And maybe we didn't decide that consciously, but on some level, we allowed them to have that power, and a lot of us feel a lot of shame about having done that. Even though it's not our fault, even though we know better now, we beat ourselves up for what we didn't know then, and that's important to remember. We shouldn't do that. Like I said, we get isolated, we don't trust people, we feel more pulled away, we feel dissociated from people, we feel distant from people. And if you're someone who had a really strong sense of faith in any particular religion or modality, and you go through this stuff, you might find yourself feeling completely separate from that. And very often, people who grow up in a certain kind of religion, or people who are raised in a certain kind of way, will step away from that thing after they go through abuse, and for a number of reasons that we're not going to go into today. Those are some common things that you deal with as someone who goes through CPTSD. The other thing is the brain chemistry factor. When you are constantly going through ups and downs that come with being in a toxic relationship, and you go through the cycle, the, you know, love bombing, devalue, discard, hoover, love bombing, devalue, discard, hoover kind of cycle, your adrenaline is going to be all over the place. You're not going to naturally produce dopamine, and you're not going to naturally find a way to sort of self-regulate. That is why we have the emotional dysregulation. And I've done other videos in more detail on that. You can check those out in the link here. We might also find ourselves avoiding thinking about things that stress us or trigger us because it's just too much for us. And sometimes those things are things we need to deal with. Some of us might use alcohol, drugs, shopping, gambling, whatever, to kind of numb the pain and keep moving forward from there, or to not feel stuff. Some survivors engage in horrible things like self-harm, and I'm not going to go into any more detail on that, but it's not okay. And sometimes when you have been in a situation where you've been called weak or you've been called not good enough for your whole life, not only will you blame yourself, but often certain professionals will blame you as well, whether we're talking about a psychologist or a counselor or somebody like that who just doesn't really understand PTSD or CPTSD or the nuances that come and the subtlety that comes with narcissistic abuse. People don't get it unless they've experienced it and really dug into it. And so this is important because a lot of my clients, a lot of people here on YouTube, a lot of people in other places that I'm in community, they say to me, my therapist told me it was my fault. And they spent years believing that. And that's something that's so important to note. You cannot blame yourself and you cannot allow other people to blame you for what you've gone through. That's enough about CPTSD for now. But how do you get past it? What do you do to get over it? What do you do to really stop feeling stuck? That's what we're going to talk about now. One of the first things I would say to you is that you have to give yourself a little compassion. You have to forgive yourself for what you did before, for what you didn't know, for what you dealt with in your abusive situation. But you also have to be prepared to stop dwelling on that stuff. Give yourself a little compassion. Give yourself a break. You know, if you need to be mad at yourself for a minute, let it happen, but then move forward and embrace yourself. And one of the things I tell everybody, which is true, is if you are in a situation where you're hating on yourself, you're not loving your life right now, things are difficult, things are terrible, go ahead and think about your child or your best friend or your sister or anybody who you love unconditionally. And imagine that that person was saying to you, hey, I feel this way, only it's the feelings you're feeling. I feel sad. I feel angry. I feel lonely. I feel like I messed up real bad and I don't think I can fix anything. And then I want you to turn around and imagine, what would you say to someone who you love unconditionally about that thing? What advice would you give to them? How would you hug them? How would you care about them? What would you do differently than you're doing for yourself? And then, my friend, I want you to look right in the mirror and I want you to do those things for yourself, because that is the only way we will ever grow forward, is if we can stop hating ourselves. I know. You don't have to go all up, full out self-love right away, okay? But just start off with self-acceptance. Start off with giving yourself a break. You've been through a lot. Give yourself a break. It's going to be okay. I always like to say that you can control how you feel, but I don't always think people understand what I mean by that. It's not that I don't have emotions. It's not that when somebody says something hurtful to me that I don't feel it real hard just like everybody else. What the difference is that it's about changing your perception. I change the way I feel. I change the way I see things. I change the way I understand things. And I choose how I feel. I can't decide to myself that I'm not going to feel hurt when somebody walks up to me and goes, you're freaking ugly, right? Or I hate your YouTube videos or whatever it is they're saying to me. But I can change the way I choose to respond, react, and perceive that situation. You know, and one of my best tips ever is to not respond, react, or do anything when someone isn't trying to hear you. If someone gives me criticism that is helpful, like they say, oh my gosh, you talk too fast in your videos. I do know that, and I'm sorry about that. I try to talk slower, but sometimes I get excited. Anyway, that is valuable feedback. If somebody says to me, I don't like the way that, you know, the music sounds under the video, so don't put music in your videos. Guess what? I hardly ever do for that reason, because people said that to me in the beginning. If people say to me, you're ugly and you have a big stupid nose, well, I cannot change any of those things. I don't think my nose is that big, but if it were, it doesn't really matter. I look how I look. I am who I am, and I'm not willing to try to change all of that. So I just let those things go. Those are things I can't change. My point is, If someone's giving you criticism that is constructive and helpful, take it with an open mind and an open heart. That person's really trying to help you. But if somebody's criticizing you in a way that is just mean and hateful, don't even think about that person again. Just let it go. Realize they're a brick wall. They won't be helped. Move on. So when you feel that happen and you feel that wave of emotion about to smack you in your face, I want you to try this. I want you to let it come. Let the emotion come. Let it wash over you. Feel it. Breathe in it. Sleep in it if you really need to. Let it kind of flow through. And then when that's done, take a deep breath and then start consciously thinking to yourself, how am I going to handle this thing that just happened? How am I going to handle this emotion? How am I going to deal with this emotion? Feeling the emotion is different than reacting to the emotion. Do you understand what I mean? You need to feel the emotion. It comes, you have to let it go. If you just shove it down or you try to forget it happened, you're just going to drive yourself crazy. So feel the emotion, but then choose how you go from there. Choose, do I let it out? Do I scream in this person's face? Do I shut my mouth and realize their limitations? How do you want to react to that thing? And I'll just give you a little hint. If somebody ever tells you that you're ugly, my daughter's friend came up with this amazing comeback. And it's this, look, oh my God, you're so ugly. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not a mirror. Isn't that great? I love it. Anyway, so my point is that you choose how you respond, you choose how you react, and that will help you. I promise you it will. But how do you, like, literally physically, how do you start doing stuff again? Because, I mean, we can go through all the emotional control stuff if we want to, but how do you start physically growing again? How do you start physically getting up out of the bed, getting up out of the house, and doing the stuff? And this is the hard part, my friend, but I'm just going to put it out there for you. Today, I did not want to do these videos. Today, I did not want to put on makeup. I did not want to do my hair. I did not want to do any of these things. But you know what I did? I gave myself this deal. I was like, listen, go in there and find some clothes, put the clothes on. And if you feel done at that point, you can walk away. So I did it. I'm like, oh. And then I was like, well, you know, go in there and put your moisturizer on, get your face ready for the makeup in case you decide to put the makeup on. So I stayed in there. I did the makeup. I did the moisturizer. And then I was like, well, let's put the base on. And then if you feel like stopping after that, it's okay to stop after that. So I did the base. Well, I'm feeling okay. Let me do the rest of the thing and the lipstick. Okay, let me do my hair really quick. Okay, I didn't do great on my hair, but I tried. My point is one thing. Just do one thing. I know it seems small, but one thing. And don't rush it. I mean, if you've been stuck in your house for 6 months, tomorrow you're not going to go out and like join the circus. I mean, you're just not. You're going to have to take baby steps. That's my point. Forgive yourself for your situation. Forgive yourself for what you didn't know when you didn't know it. And then just give yourself baby steps. Today, my baby steps included literally getting up and going into the place where my clothing is and picking out something to wear. That was my only thing I had to do. And everything else comes with it. Does that make sense? Give yourself permission. Give yourself permission to stop after one thing. And if you really need to stop, then stop and start again tomorrow. Okay? Give yourself one thing to do. I promise you, I know it seems too simple, but just try it. It's the same thing if your house is overwhelmingly dirty or messy. You know, walk around your house and find one thing you can clean up really fast. And then just clean up that one thing. I love to pick a table because when you clean up a table, a surface makes your house look, you know, a clean surface makes your house look cleaner. So little tip for me to you. I hope this is helpful. I know it's not so easy. Please remember that you do go through a certain amount of grief after the narcissistic abuse ends, even sometimes as soon as you start to realize it's going to end because you're gonna leave. Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life, and hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm gonna leave for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right over there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.